Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Last Thursday evening, an Asian American New York City man was stabbed in the back in Chinatown. We've spoken on the show about the overall uptick in crime we've seen since the start of the pandemic. We've talked before about anti-Asian violence, but the kind of targeted attack that we saw on Thursday is part of a surge in violence aimed at Asian Americans here and nationwide. By some estimates, there have been more than 500 of these bias incidents just in New York City since the beginning of 2020. And per my next guest reporting, the Asian American Bar Association of New York estimates that there have been more than 2,500 anti-Asian hate incidents nationwide between March and September of 2020. Despite this alarming surge of violence targeted at Asian Americans, the Manhattan District Attorney has sometimes been reluctant to classify these attacks as hate crimes, as in the case of the man who was stabbed in the back in Chinatown last Thursday. So this past weekend, in a multi-ethnic show of solidarity, hundreds of people rallied to rise up against anti-Asian hate. As we hit the one-year mark since the first COVID stay-at-home orders, it's worth remembering that even before such restrictions were implemented, Asian Americans faced xenophobic rhetoric and violence at the hands of people who exploited the virus's early emergence in China. Somebody called it the China virus, which, even if he meant the government of China, not every person limits their perception to just that. So what's going on? What's been the community-led response to these attacks? And are elected officials paying enough attention? Joining me now is Arun Venugopal, senior reporter in the Race and Justice Unit here at WNYC. Hi, Arun. So great to have you with us today.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, particularly Asian American listeners of any background listening right now, we invite your phone calls. How have these attacks affected your everyday lives, even if you have not been attacked? In what ways are you modifying your behavior? Because that's a big part of the story right now. Were you at Saturday's rally? And if so, what do you want people to know about the community-led response to these attacks? 646-435-7280. How are you changing your behavior if you're Asian American of any background because of the increased risk of attacks? Or anything else you want to say, 646-435-7280, or tweet your question at Brian Lehrer. Arun, tell us more. What's going on and why now?
Well, I think you have two things. One, the ongoing problem, this very alarming number of attacks happening against Asian Americans across the country, very much a New York City phenomenon. According to the surveys that have been conducted, people in New York are just as likely, in fact, more likely to experience certain kinds of assaults, verbal attacks, spat upon, coughed on, than Asian Americans in other parts of the country. And as you see from this most recent incident, the one that you just mentioned, this is happening in Asian majority areas, such as Manhattan, Chinatown. There was an incident several days earlier than that that happened in Flushing, where a woman was shoved to the ground. She blacked out. She needed stitches. This is really alarming to people because it feels like, I think, when you speak to Asian Americans, there is no safe place. Even Chinatowns are not immune from that kind of random or not so random, really, acts of violence that are happening. Some of them are deadly. The person who just got stabbed, he could die.
And in a powerful moment from Saturday's Rise Up Against Asian Hate rally, a man named Noel Quintana addressed demonstrators. Last month, his face was slashed on the subway, and here's 13 seconds of what he said at the rally.
I called for help, but nobody came for help. There were a lot of New Yorkers there, and I never knew that nobody would help me in this kind of instance.
Nobody came to his aid, he said. Have other victims of these anti-Asian attacks expressed experiencing the same thing? Is this part of the pattern?
I certainly think that he voiced something that a lot of people are especially terrified by, Brian, which is that they're not sure that the community is there, that they've got their back. And I was right there a few feet from Noel when he spoke. And, you know, the crowd, it felt like pin drop silence. There are hundreds of people there. And it was such a sad and unsettling moment. And I think I was perhaps projecting, but I couldn't help but feel that there was a sense of shame as people kind of absorbed this, what he was saying, you know, that there's this other side of New Yorkers, the one that, you know, doesn't necessarily come to the aid of someone who is attacked, someone like him, you know, who was attacked in a subway car. The attacker ran off, and they said nobody really was there to video, you know, to video record this incident or to help, you know, go after the attacker. And this is something you do hear quite often. People are terrified by this. And I think what is also important is that he said this at an event like this rally downtown, where you had members of the political leadership, you know, be present. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Letitia James, New York State Attorney General, a number of mayoral hopefuls, Maya Wiley, Andrew Yang. So if there's anything positive happening, it's that, you know, these incidents, such as Noel Quintana's, are being increasingly being absorbed as like urgent political issues. And the question is, you know, what do you do with that political mobilization?
And before we take some phone calls, just one follow-up on this notion that it's not going to get reported in the same way or responded to by people who may be around there in the same way. In your article for Gothamist on this, you quote Deputy Inspector Stuart Liu, who heads the Asian Hate Crime Task Force of the NYPD, and he said, quote, I spoke to people who rob Asian Americans, and they'll tell you why they target Asian Americans. It's not because they're Asian. They perceive them to be soft targets. They carry cash. They won't report it. It's less likely that they'll identify them, and they put up the least amount of resistance. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, I thought that was really, you know, I asked him the question because I'd heard this sort of perception from another member of the Asian American community, Chris Kwok, who's on the board of the Asian American Bar Association in New York, who said, I think it's because we're seen as soft targets. Now, this quote that you just read out, where Deputy Inspector Stuart Liu said, you know, it's not because they're Asian. I think a lot of people think, like, what is that supposed to mean? Obviously, it's because they're Asian. There's this cultural construct, if you will, that they're soft targets. They won't fight back. But I think the way we need to understand it going forward is, you know, does the broader community support populations that are being targeted, in this case, Asian Americans? And does the political establishment, you know, are they seen as isolated communities and not simply individuals who may not fight back, but are they seen as isolated communities or are they seen as communities who have support from whether it's law enforcement or the political leadership or from the person on the street who's willing to come to their aid?
Nong in Jackson Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nong. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you, Brian. And I never called in before, so it's something totally new, but I felt it deserved it. I am of Asian descent, first born immigrant, and ever since as a child, always experienced such racial discrimination, getting beaten up after school and running home and my parents saying not to make a big deal about it. So there is some cultural truth to what you just said before. And just recently, due to the pandemic, and I have to say, generally speaking, taking three steps back, this pandemic has brought up a tremendous amount of issues in every respect, economic, racial, et cetera, et cetera. My wife and I experienced racial discrimination back in March. We had to go to a Columbian Presbyterian hospital. They wouldn't allow my wife to go in, which is fine, but she was waiting outside. She was harassed by a woman who was literally telling her to go back to her country and also videotaped her as well. When my wife tried to run away from her, walk away from her, she followed her. And previous to that, I've known friends that were spat at. I was yelled at, and my wife was yelled at also, walking in Queens. So it's, quite honestly, nothing new to the Asian community, to be quite honest.
Thank you, Nong. And, you know, when things like this happen and a longtime listener comes out of the woodwork and feels moved to call in for this as their first call to the show, it's doubly sad, Arun.
It is. And I think that you know, it's 1 year now that we've been in this pandemic. There's something in the bloodstream, of our society, which is really troubling. And at the same time, we know that this was activated, it was fomented from the top by President Trump, his allies. And, you know, we have a new administration. President Biden, Vice President Harris have both made statements. But, you know, getting at the heart of this is very tough. And I don't think it's completely clear how you address this when it seems to be so dispersed throughout this, you know, the community or the population. You know, people are still grappling with this. They're just trying to get attention to this problem. And so, you know, and the fact that it's not just people who are, say, delivery workers who have to contend with this on a daily basis. It happens across the socioeconomic spectrum. You know, the doctors who are Asian American have to deal with this, a lot of other people. And I think, you know, that is something that is both something we have to register and just figure out how you sort of combat that. But it's very troubling.
Let's take another call. Christine in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Christine.
Hey, Brian, how are you? First time caller, long time listener as well. And yeah, your previous caller really resonated with me as well. My husband and I were attacked on the Upper West Side about 4 years ago by a white male who called me a racial slur. We came back and he charged at us. And, you know, I had a similar experience working with the cops. They were basically like, well, you know, you may have instigated the situation. It's probably better if you just don't press charges. I would say that, you know, there were a lot of people who came to my help, but there's always this one woman that I've, from my experience, this one white woman who always says that she's witnessed everything and that points the fingers at me. I'm Taiwanese American. And yeah, it's tough. I think, you know, the stereotype that's been placed on my shoulders as a, you know, female, Taiwanese, Asian, that we're meant to be meek, that I've actually been more outspoken in my day-to-day life. And, you know, I'm looked down upon for being outspoken, you know, and that I bring sort of conflict or controversy onto myself.
How do you respond to that when people bring it up?
Do you mean with me?
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's tough to hear, right? Because, you know, you want to stand up for what's right. You want to establish your boundaries. And I think part of it is that people don't expect you to be so outspoken, you know? I mean, it's the hardest when it comes from your friends and family, other Asians, other Taiwanese who think that you should be a certain way. You know, I've been called all sorts of names, aggressive, turnt, abrasive. I mean, I think part of it is just like accepting who you are and, you know, on the positive note, people look to you as being an advocate and a voice and a support system, you know, so there are pros and cons to both.
Christine, thank you so much for your call and your candor. And Deborah in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a big fan, first time caller myself. So the whole hate crimes that are happening against Asians are just unbelievably shocking to me. It has changed how I carry myself outside and whether I want to take the subway even or not. I tend to keep my head down, and even so, I'm half Korean, but a lot of people still view me as Asian. And so it's just been really unfortunate, and I have to agree that I feel that people generally perceive Asians to maybe be passive and not report things, and so they do see them as easy targets, which is really unfortunate.
So you have actually become more wary of walking outside in recent months because of this surge?
Yes. I do actively try to avoid the subway, and I'm working from home anyways, and so I mostly stay at home, but yeah, I make sure if I'm walking around, my boyfriend's with me, or like I said, I just keep my head down and just keep to myself.
Deborah, thank you so much for calling in. So, Arun, this run of first-time callers being brought out of the woodwork by this, and Deborah's story, you know, there, if you need a practical effect of hate crimes that aren't even directed at you. You haven't had the personal experience, and how it chills people, chills people's behavior, whether they're hate crimes or crimes that perceive you as a soft target. And then people can't go about their normal lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you cited this figure earlier, Brian, around approximately 500 anti-Asian bias incidents. That's something that the Asian American Federation, who organized a rally over the weekend, has put out, and then thousands more across the country. But the understanding is that there's so many more that don't go reported. Some people don't even know, whether it's worth reporting it. Where do you report it? Is anybody going to care? But it is very important, I think, to come forward and to report it, whether it's to a group like Stop AAPI Hate or the Asian American Federation or others, because we have to get our hands around this. And I mean, of course, we at WNYC, if I could just say, the Race and Justice Unit, of which I'm a part of, we are making bias and bias crimes and hate a greater part of our focus. We do want to hear from listeners. So, if you have ideas as a listener, what you want to see covered in the area of bias, please do, reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Arun NYC, ARUN NYC. You can find me on Facebook. This is a very important part. Unfortunately, we don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. So, whether you're Asian or otherwise, please, get in touch with your ideas or experiences of bias.
Let me get a couple of more callers in here. So many people are calling in. Binish in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Binish.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm not Asian, I'm South Asian, but I told the screener that...
That's Asian?
This it is, I guess. I just wanted to point out that, this could have been anyone. This could be, had this originated in India, it would have been the Indian virus, and South Asians could have been targeted. I think the South Asian community absolutely needs to step up, absolutely needs to raise its voice. This needs to be an intersectional issue. We were talking about racial justice not too long ago. This needs to be part of that as well. We cannot, I feel like, South Asians in general tend to keep to ourselves, and a lot of times we think, well, that's not our issue. It is our issue. We've experienced hate crimes in the past. We've grown up with the city, in the 1980s, there was a huge, sort of anti-Indian bias and, hate crimes happening back then.
The dot busters. Yeah.
Exactly. People forget about that, but the whole dot busters thing was very scary. And so our Asian, brothers and sisters are experiencing something similar. And so I just wanted to say that. I think the South Asian community, which is quite diverse in and of itself, needs to absolutely step up and raise its voice on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such an important issue. Like, as New Yorkers, many of us have lived through, waves of anti-South Asian attacks that get kind of unleashed at moments of sort of nationalism. It's white supremacy. The complicated part of this is that the attacks against, East Asians right now, it's coming from many members of different communities. And so that's partly what makes it very messy and muddy to wade through this and figure out what the best approach, to it is, whether law enforcement even works or whether this should be more about like healing communities who are struggling right now, as some people have been saying, hurt people. And that's, I think, partly getting at the sensitivities and the need sort of like for communities to be, forming solidarity with one another, especially groups which have been on the receiving end historically of hate and bias.
So one more call. Lucinda in Patterson, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lucinda. Lucinda, you there? Am I saying your name right? Is it Lucinda in Patterson? I guess no, Lucinda. So we'll finish on that point. What was that historical reference that you made? What? Busters, for people who don't know that?
I'm not sure if he's still on the phone, but Brian, the Dot Busters were sort of a group of, I think, primarily white New Jersey residents who basically, when certain communities in New Jersey were seeing an influx of Indian American, perhaps more broadly South Asian residents, this was a racist sort of like backlash against some of these people. I mean, you talk to people who are now, say, middle aged, that was formative for them in terms of the terror they felt back then, an earlier wave, I guess, of anti-South Asian violence. And I mean, I kind of think like when we think about moments like this, what we're going through, like you have communities who have been at times valorized, you know, the model minority sort of myth, but it's like this giant switch that keeps on getting toggled. And, you know, when America, Americans decide that they want to like flip it from, you know, you're on our side, we like you, to, you know, you're not one of us, you're the, you know, the perpetual foreigner. We have to figure out how we're supposed to respond to that. And this is like one of those moments, I think, right now.
So last question, Arun, based on your reporting, do members of the community feel like elected officials are doing enough, or are there specific law enforcement or policy steps that they feel aren't being taken?
I think you're seeing this real debate, Brian, right now play out at events like the Rise Up Against Asian Hate rally and happening elsewhere, which is, should the city invest in more resources for this NYPD Asian Hate Crime Task Force, make it fully staffed rather than, you know, pulling in detectives here and there? That's what Tish James said on stage. Or is law enforcement part of the problem, you know, as other community members, you know, contend? Somebody from New York Immigration Coalition, Murad Awada, said, you know, we can't police our way out of this. You know, we have to provide, you know, mental health services, language appropriate services. You know, we have to provide resources for community-led healing. And so I think this is a policy issue, and how it plays out in the coming months is, you know, we're going to have to be watching that.
Arun Venugopal, senior reporter in WNYC's Race and Justice Unit. Thanks, Arun. We'll be listening and reading you on Gothamist.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.